Today's shiur is dedicated to the memory of Mina Nechama Bas Harav Baruch Moshe Nechemia. It's also the one time a year where we are coordinated with the Sefer HaChinuch and the Parshas HaShavua. That we're learning Parshas Pinchas in the Sefer HaChinuch, and we are leading this week Parshas Pinchas, at least in Chutz Laretz. Fine, so we're at the section in Mitzvah Tuf, Mitzvah 400, where it says, Mishor Sheha Mitzvah, as follows. Mishor Sheha Mitzvah, the reasoning behind the Mitzvah is as follows. Kedei Sheyeda Adam Yizbonin Ki Olam Biyad Adon Mashkiach Al Chavri Yosef. The reason is that people should know that the world is in the hands of a being, of God, who observes everything and observes the creations. V'ritzon v'cheftzo atov zocheh kol echad v'echad mibnei olam b'chelek ha'nechosim shehu masig v'olamo. So it's because of the grace of God that each person attains the wealth and possessions that they do during their lifetime. U'matanaso baruch hu mivoreches shetimoshech le'olam la'asher yitenen alo. So when God gives you wealth, it's yours. Again, you're supposed to do good things with it. You're supposed to give tzedakah. You're supposed to support Jewish institutions, poor people, etc. But fundamentally, the reason that you have a certain amount of money, we know on Rosh Hashanah, it says that on Rosh Hashanah, part of it doesn't. God doesn't just decree who's going to live and who's going to die, but God decrees how financially well you're going to do in the upcoming year. So it's all part of the package that you shouldn't take lightly. You shouldn't think that kochi v'otzim yadi on the one hand. That I'm totally responsible for all the wealth that came to me. It's because of God's blessing. And also, you shouldn't dismiss it, saying, oh, it's just random chance, you know, who knows, today it could be, today it's here, tomorrow it could be gone. But rather, one should accept it as part of God's blessing. So if it hadn't been that Adam and Eve would have sinned, so then people would never have died. And then what? You'd have your wealth forever. Each person, when they made money, it would exist forever. So what? Just because you die, what? So God's blessing should stop? No, God's blessing on your wealth should continue even when your body is no longer in physical existence in the world. God should continue blessing you with the material possessions. That since fundamentally in the part of the original plan of the world where people didn't die, it would be yours forever. So now the point of the Yerusha is that it should be the next best thing. The next best thing is that one's continuation of one's bodily genetic line.
Male.
No. Well, not for you, Mrs. Hirsch. I would think that the one person in this room who would Davka not make that comment is you.
I'm worried about everybody else.
Because you're... Because, okay, so you have two daughters, so therefore, so they inherit you. Halachically, you don't need a halachic will, we pointed out last time. Everyone else in the room needs a halachic will. V'imhu bavono yomus uvanim lo yiulo. So what happens? So if you die and you have no children, riya birkas Hashem shetoshu vel hakarov elov. So so it's going to be the closest relative who's going to inherit your money. Kizos habracha shezacha ba ze. This is the blessing that the original owner of the money has merited. Ozuchuso garmolo, ozuchus avosav, either your own merits or your ancestors' merits. So im krovim lo yoser, lomad kishro namasesh, amasesh zocha imo lenasachim. Lenachasim. Lenachasim. So you inherited these material possessions, you attained these material possessions, partially due to the merit of good deeds that you learned from your ancestors or your close relatives. So therefore, they should be the ones through whom the blessing of God continues by way of giving you your material possessions and making sure they have a continuation is somewhat related to you. In other words, so maybe we should say, no, to the government, you know, well, it's against our religion. We can't pay estate tax.
Sorry.
It's against our religion. We hold, says in the Sefer HaChinuch, that all our possessions when we die have to go to close relatives, not to the state, because this is, it shows that if we pay some to the state, it's against God's design for the for this money. You can see how far that gets you. But fundamentally, that's true. If the government wouldn't interfere, then it would not be proper to give money to anyone but the halachic heirs, unless there's a reason to. So we pointed out last time that one of the major reasons that we don't necessarily divide estates in accordance with the absolute halacha is because of strife. That nowadays it's expected that daughters normally expect that they're going to inherit part of the parents' estate. And whether they should be thinking that or not is a separate question, but they know they expect to do so. So if they don't inherit it, so then they're going to be, there's going to cause a lot of strife within the family. So therefore, that's why we allow the mechanism of a halachic will that allows the estate to be divided, or ensures that the estate will be divided in a manner that's not in total consonance with the halacha. Again, it's, the property actually belongs to the halachic heirs, but the halachic will ensures that they nevertheless give up their halachic rights to it in favor of the people whom the testator had in mind. Yeah.
I don't want to.
Are your halachic heirs going to contest your secular will? Maybe not. So then there's not a problem.
Well, I don't really have halachic heirs.
You must. I have everyone but a convert.
Cousins.
Everyone but a childless convert has halachic heirs. Bistaliku v'zaru mehen. So either the children, who are the direct continuation of one's line, they're the closest there is to one's actual self, or other halachic heirs who are close relatives, usually close relatives. I mean, I guess it's theoretically it's possible that the one's closest halachic heir could be one's fourth cousin. If you had a lot of ancestors that had only one child and you're the only heir, so it's possible, but it's very unusual. You want the blessing to, the merit to accrue to those who influenced you to have the zechus in the first place to acquire all this wealth. Midine ha-mitzvah. Okay, those are the halachos of this mitzvah. Masha amru zichron levracha v'masnisin d'yesh nochlin. There's a perek in Bava Basra called Yesh Nochlin, which talks about all the laws of inheritance. Seder nachalos kachu. It says explicitly in the Torah, basically, but it's rehashed in the Mishnah. Ish ki yamus obein elo. So it says about benos slavchad. So if a person dies and he has no sons, so you give it to the daughter. So aben kodem levas. So one's primary halachic heirs are one's sons. So if you have sons and daughters, so the daughters are disinherited, and the sons divide up the estate between them. So, I mean, you have to understand... If there is a bechor.
Right.
If there is a bechor. So if you have if you have first five girls and then you have five boys... So then there is no bechor. The estate would just be divided equally between the five boys. So you have to understand that in the times, again, the Torah is unchanging and it's whatever, but fundamentally the time, in the times of the Chumash, so the husbands were the ones who managed all the property. The men managed all the property. The women didn't really manage so much property. So all the monetary issues were basically settled through the male line. And also, I was just thinking, where daughters maybe complain, and also it ends up evening out eventually, because it was assumed that every woman was going to be married. So then, her husband, is going to inherit, he's going to be the sole heir or just divided among the sons from his father. So eventually, it'll even out. So she won't get her father's money, so she'll get her father-in-law's money. Okay, no, it evens out. You could be an advantageous case. Let's say if her father is a simple laborer and her father-in-law is a billionaire. So she'd rather give up her portion in the for her husband to get a larger portion. So it ends up the grand scheme of things, it ends up working out. But nevertheless, nowadays people are more attached to the money of one's own parents. So therefore, that's why nowadays it's customary that we divide the estate equally between the daughters and the sons in normal circumstances. But it is recommended, again, if it will not cause strife, that you should have a token amount of money that you divide according to the way the Torah says, just to give some nod and acknowledgement to the to that the fact that the Torah does prescribe a different process for the distribution of the assets.
Since we're talking about history a little bit, when was it about when things changed and women got also?
Good question.
In medieval Europe, that's the basis of the halachic will. In medieval Europe, you have a document that's mentioned in Nachla Shiva, which is a major work on shtaros. It talks about all different types of documents, how to fill out a ksuba, how to get also a different way, tanoim, the way all different types of documents. So one of the documents that's included in that compendium is called the shtar chatzi zohar. That in order, the Gemara says that you're allowed to give a daughter extra money in order to improve her marriage prospects. So what they used to do is instead of a father giving her daughter his daughter much of a dowry up front, so he used to write a document when she got married that said essentially that I owe my daughter a lot of money. I mentioned it last time a little bit, but for your sake, we can review briefly. I owe my daughter a lot of money, this daughter a lot of money who's getting married. But I waive this debt if my sons give her in the estate half a portion of the of what a male child would get, That's called a shtar chatzi zocher. So we know in Europe it was customary that when a daughter got married, she would be given essentially as a dowry as half of a portion of a son. That's how it started. Except Svarim. It says that Svarim were excluded from the Shtar Chatzi Zohar, that be given only to the boys.
No.
Yeah. Why the half? I mean, the structure could incorporate any...
It wasn't an inheritance, really. It was more like a dowry.
Right, but I mean...
Yeah, they didn't want it...
The half is not essential to the structure of that document, right?
Right, that's why the halachic will works on that pattern.
Right. Okay.
But now, there is also something recorded that there were people, it was less common... But if one's daughter was particularly a good catch, they would have a document called the Shtar Shalem Zachar. It's not good Hebrew. It's a strange Hebrew formulation. But that you would do the same thing, but you would give the daughter a full portion in the inheritance. Rabbi Kiva Eger wrote Shtar Shalem Zachar. Shtar Shalem Zachar. When his daughter got married to the Chassam Sofer. So this was the wedding, this was like Jewish royalty wedding.
Yeah.
You know, the two huge gedolim became father-in-law and son-in-law. It's interesting, the Rabbi Kiva Eger was about 6 months older than the Chassam Sofer. And his daughter married the Chassam Sofer. It was a second marriage for both of them. So she was a young widow, and he was an older widower in his... I think in his 50s at the time, and they got married. Okay, so it's interesting also that the Chassam Sofer's first wife was childless. She was also an almana. She was also a young widow originally when they first got married. He was also young at that time, so she was married for a few years and she had no children. So some people advised him that he shouldn't marry her because maybe she can't have kids. So he said no. He wants to go ahead with the wedding anyway. So. That happened. She couldn't have kids. She had no kids. So she was. Then when the Chassam Sofer was in his 50s, so his first wife died, and then he married the daughter of the Chassam Sofer, and then he had several kids with the daughter of the Rabbi Kiva Eger. I'm sorry, daughter. He had several kids with the daughter of Rabbi Kiva Eger. So the Chassam Sofer had his first child when he was in his 50s. It was interesting. Yeah.
What happened in Sephardic communities?
I think in Sephardic communities, there's no record of such a thing until recently. I think so. I mean, it could be another way of doing it is you give the daughter lots of gifts in her lifetime. I mean, in your lifetime, sorry. The deceased, the person who's going to be deceased, in their lifetime. So, okay. There are ways of doing it, but again, it all depends on your expectations. If the daughter doesn't expect to receive a portion of the inheritance, so she's not going to be offended by not receiving a portion of the inheritance.
Well, at what point were secular wills, did secular government get involved in inheritance?
I mean, the Rashba talks about it in a tshuva. I would assume a lot. I'm not sure. When I gave a shiur on Shavuos at Mount Sinai, and was talking about lighting Yontif candles. You were there.
Yeah.
So the I mentioned the possibility that maybe you really shouldn't light candles on Yontif because they're electric lights, so the lighting candles on Yontif is not necessary. I'm not going to go into all that, the whole discussion now, but then a young woman raised her hand. And so I said, so why do we light candles? And I was working very hard to say why maybe you should and are allowed to light candles on Yontif, even though they're electric lights. So a young woman raised her hand and said, I don't understand. If the halacha says you don't light candles, so it doesn't matter what we feel. Like, we'll feel bad without lighting Yontif candles. So, you know, what? The halacha is the halacha. So I said, oh. Not everyone. I like that thinking, but not everybody thinks like you. And I spent, you know, thinking about that now. I'm thinking, you know, does she still feel that way when it comes to the laws of inheritance? She says, "No, I, you know, Dad, don't give me anything. Don't give me the halacha as the halacha. I want nothing."
The rich father-in-law coming.
Yeah. Okay. So if her father-in-law is rich, so then it doesn't matter. Okay. Fine. So the seder is like this: Haben kol and labas first, the son and the daughter. V'chol yotze yerecho shel ben kod min labas. So let's say one son is deceased, but he has a child.
Uh-huh.
So anyone that is a descendant of the son comes before the daughter. So in other words, even though the daughter is one generation removed, and the grandson or great-grandson, great-great-grandson from the son is several generations removed, so the descendant of the son will still take precedence. And even if it's the son's daughter.
Ah.
Son's daughter. What do you mean? Daughter should be... If the son has... Obviously, the son's son. If the son has sons and daughters, the daughters will, you know, won't get anything, and the sons will. But if the son has only daughters, then the daughters will inherit... will be the first to inherit more than their aunts.
Well, that makes sense, though, because it's here's a question of, you know, the descendants... Male or female,
right,
of the son are basically standing in for the son.
Exactly.
It's his house. It's
yes,
his, you know,
yes, yes, exactly. Essentially, yes. Essentially, you imagine the property as if it goes from the testator now, as if it moves to the next heir, and if the heir is deceased, so then it stays with the heir. It's as if it got to the heir, and then it, now it goes down to his heirs.
If the son died,
right,
before, then it would still be a double, you know.
Yeah. 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 So this is a important principle that everyone who's a descendant of a proper heir gets precedence over the next level heir, even though the heir is the next potential heir is a closer generationally to the original testator. That's why, you know, there was a lot of ill feeling to say that this happens in the secular. Succession. I don't know. Whatever. And that's why there's a lot of resentment when Queen Victoria became queen. No, it's the same thing. So Queen Victoria's father was I think the fourth son of King George III. So she had, and Queen George III had 15 children. I think he had 15 children. So he still had many sons who were alive and younger than Queen Victoria's father, older than Queen Victoria, but they were young. They were younger than Queen Victoria's father, and her father was obviously deceased. So they were thinking, "What? We're the king's son. I'm the kid." Her oldest uncle, who is still alive, was thinking, "What? I'm the king's son. I should become the king. My 18-year-old niece is becoming the queen."
Yeah.
No, that's how it works. It goes by once her father had a child. So then she got it. So Abbas Kodemis Laachin. So, fine. The daughter takes precedence over the testator's brothers. But the same thing that all the daughter's descendants will now take precedence over anyone else. Ha'achid or ha'achayus b'makom she'inachin kod min la'achi ha'av, and the brothers, well, then the sisters would come after the brothers of the deceased. And they would come before the father's brothers. We get the same idea. And the one's father's brothers. And if your father's sisters, if there are no brothers, they come before everyone else. Okay, but you basically keep going back in time in the male line, and you go to the descendants first, first the male, and then the female. He skipped, oddly enough, in the Sefer HaChinuch, that obviously one's father gets first before the brothers. In other words, your father's still alive. I guess that's an unusual scenario, but if your father is, if you have no children and no children's descendants, and your father's still alive, so then your father would be the heir before your siblings. Zeklal. This is the general principle. Kol hakodem banachala yotzei recha kodem. If you come first in the order of inheritance, so then your descendants also come first. V'ha'av kodem l'chol yotzei arecho. But the father has precedence over all his descendants. V'al derech hazeh sh'amarnu holech ve'ole ad rosh hadoros. And this keeps going until forever. If you have no cousins and no, you know, it would go to your, and your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was still alive, somehow, then that would go to him. Lefikach ein lach echad mi Yisrael she'ein lo yorish. There is no Jewish person who has no heir. It's impossible. It can't be. Except for
a child is convert.
A child is convert, like I said before. If you're a convert, you have no relatives. Gershon is Gershon, Kikotan Shinola dummy. That a convert is considered to be newborn, as if to be a newborn.
No.
So, therefore, the only way, they have no halachic relatives at that time. The only way of getting themselves some halachic relatives is by having a child. Otherwise, you have no halachic relatives.
Plus, if you're an only child of all your, you know, quite far back grandparents in the tree are singletons.
It would go to your sixth cousins, whatever the closest relatives are.
You probably can't even trace him, six cousins.
Doesn't matter. Got to do it. Otherwise, whoever else takes your money is stealing.
No such thing. I mean, barely know my second cousins.
Gotta search. I mean,
no, but I mean, seriously, if they're...
It's a halachic will.
If I were an only child,
yeah,
my parents had both been only children and their grandparents, and I didn't have children, blah blah blah. So there's nobody out there. There's no second.
There's always someone. That's what it says in the Sefer Chinuch. There's no Jewish person who has no heirs.
That's
who it is. And if you don't want it to go to them, or you can't find them, you don't want anyone else to be stealing, so you want to, you should write a halachic will.
Same thing, I assume, is true in secular law as well. I mean, you know, anybody, you know, if you don't have immediate heirs, whoever it is, however remote it might be, 15th cousin, whatever you say, you know, they can prove it. You know,
I would assume so, too.
That's a lot.
I'm sure they do, too, you know.
I would assume so, too. The only difference, obviously, is that in secular law, you could...
Make a will
and change... Yeah, you could give property after death, which in halacha, you cannot... give property after death. That's the main difference. So what happens if a childless convert dies? Hefker. All his or her property becomes hefker. You can walk up and take it.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Let people do that.
It's an unusual scenario as possible. But
the first thing a ger should do after getting out of the mikvah is make a halachic will, right?
Well, hopefully they're going to get married and have kids. Then will be the husband or the Okay. Yeah, it's an unusual case, but good. Sure. Somebody get out. There's a Beis Din right there.
Yeah.
Perfect. All in one service. Garris and
halachic service operation.
Yeah, Garris and halachic will all together. Masha Amrusham, it says in the Gemara in Bava Basra, She'ein ha'em yoreshes baneha. A mother does not inherit the property of the child. Ud v'davar ze kabbalah. This is a received tradition. V'achim min ha'em einam yorshim ze. And the same thing would be that the maternal brothers would not inherit each other's property. The inheritance, unless you're talking about a daughter, goes purely through the male line. The mishpachas eim ein akruya mishpacha, because a family is one's father's family. Uben mamzer, oach mamzer, hareze yoresh kishar banim. If you have a child who's a mamzer, or brothers who are related to each other through a mamzerous type of relationship, then they still inherit. It's still your son. You're mekayim the mitzvah of pru revu. Also with
ben mamzer.
What?
It says ben mamzer.
Yeah.
Vechen mamzer.
Well, it doesn't matter. Either way, mine says Ben, but
it says Ben.
Oh. Ben. Yeah.
But so we know that even though mamzer is not allowed to marry a regular born Jew, so nevertheless they're fully Jewish. They can get shlishi or shishi. They can get there's no problem with their religious nature, and they're considered the full child of the father. So it's a little bit weird that if a man conceives a child with a married woman, so then that counts towards the mitzvah of Peruvu. He does this twice. Has two affairs, and then they has a boy from one and a girl from the other, two different affairs. Same affair, whatever. So then he's mekayim the mitzvah of Peruvu. Again, it's b'isser. He wasn't allowed to do that, but l'maisa is mekayim the mitzvah of Peruvu, and when he dies...
That's one of the big three.
When he dies, the son who's a mamzer, or a daughter, if that's the only, if he has only daughters who are mamzeros, they will inherit the money.
Well, no, but Frieda, nobody's saying that he doesn't pay a penalty here or above.
Yeah, I know that.
The kids shouldn't suffer.
No, that's absolutely
true. Well, they suffer a little.
They suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
But no,
yeah.
Your point is well taken.
Yeah.
There's no reason to
remove them from.
So the nafka mina is, so yeah, he wasn't allowed to do it, but if you're mekayim the mitzvah peruvu, so let's say now you had these kids with an incestuous or adulterous relationship, and then now you're suggested a shidduch, a woman who you know is cannot have children. Are you allowed to take the shidduch?
Oh, that's
a nafka mina.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Now you're allowed to take the shidduch because you're mekayim the mitzvah already. Very interesting. Okay. Vafilu ben mamzer shenishtamed yoreshu. Even a mamzer who converts to another religion remains your halachic heir. Again, it doesn't have any effect in halacha, converting to another religion. You can't.
No, blame him for converting to another religion.
What?
You can't 100% blame the guy for converting to another religion if his life is going to be made so miserable.
You say you make a shidduch with a nice mamzeres and you could, but why would she take such a shidduch? That means her children will be mamzerim.
Oh God!
Have him buy a female slave. Or it doesn't work either.
No, well, that does work. That does work.
That's
yeah,
that has been suggested.
I don't know. That was the whole shaila. That's how you relieve your children from the status of mamzerus, that a man could marry a, not marry, but, yeah, marry, I guess. He could marry a female, a shifcha, a female slave. And we know as a female slave, a shifcha kananis is only quasi-Jewish. So therefore, when you have a relationship between a full-fledged Jew and a less than full-fledged Jew, whether it be a shifcha or a completely non-Jewess, so the child follows the status of the
mother.
So therefore, the child will be an eved or a shifcha, will be a slave. And therefore, then you free the slave. Now you're a free Jew and you're not a mamzer anymore. So that's how you do it. That's how a man, at least, can, even if he's a mamzer, can relieve his children from the status of mamzer. Normally, you're not allowed to marry a slave. A full-fledged Jew is not allowed to marry a slave. But since a mamzer is not this... precluded from marrying a full-fledged Jew, so therefore you would be you're exempted.
What's the definition of slave today? I mean, if you really were going to make this work,
well, you have tefillah l'shem avdus. You have to take a woman to the mikvah and you say, "I'm quasi converting you now, but not for the sake of being a convert, but for being a female slave."
Well, wait a second, but the fact that it's usher under. Actually, all
that's what some suggest. That's what some suggest. That maybe it's maybe the goyim. They made it hard for mamzerim. They by ossering slavery, so they really messed the mamzerim over. So some people say you can't do this nowadays because it's against dina de malchusa. But others say, nah, come on. The din of the melchusa means you're not allowed to treat someone as a slave. If you take a woman to the mikveh and say, you're a slave, dunk, and then you treat her as your wife and not as a slave, then some say that maybe even according to the din of the melchusa, that would be okay.
I think you probably could still actually be convicted of slavery,
Yeah? You think so?
You certainly can, yes.
By saying you're a slave and then you treat her like a regular...
But, I mean, in America today, people are regularly being convicted for being a slave.
Yeah, but I'm saying, will they care if you have a woman that you...
We're talking about if we're creating a legal fiction here.
No, I understand that, but I just...
No, I guess the thing tends to be, if she decides that she doesn't want to be with you anymore because she just walk out and she don't do anything to stop her, then I suppose that she wouldn't be a slave. Then legal,
I guess...
That right.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, another option is go to international waters. Take a boat out. Dunk her. You have a huge mikvah right there. Dunk her right there. And then she's a slave. No. Well, woman, she wants to help you. No, she wants to help him out. And then she's going to be, maybe after that, after you finish having kids, so you'll free her, and then she'll be a full-fledged convert.
She'll get a ring card.
And then she'll be a... So she's willing to put up in order to help the mamzerim become unmamzerified. So she's willing to put up with a little bit of being called a slave for a few years until you free her. Okay. Obviously, you have to trust the guy. But the problem is that this...
Oh, that's a biggie, guys.
Who's
going to
trust the mamzer?
We test guys to give a get.
So the problem is that this solution doesn't work if for a female mamzer. Because then if she has a relationship with an eved, so then it follows her, because it follows the woman. Yeah. So there you're really stuck. Okay, but it's unusual. Again, it's somewhat unusual nowadays to have the status of the mamzer. There's tradition of the postgames that would work very hard to try to... ensure that they not be, but sometimes you can't get out of it. Sometimes, unfortunately, you do get into such situations.
It's a child with a grusha.
It's not a mother, it's a chalal.
It's a chalal, okay.
Yeah.
It's a grusha?
A divorced woman. So then the child is can marry any Jew, but is not a kohen.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Aval ben shifcha v'nochris. Oh, first of all, if you're talking about converting to another religion, still inherits you. So the shaila is... technically they inherit you, but the shaila is, are you allowed to disinherit them? If your child converts chas v'shalom to another religion, can you disinherit them? And this also comes into play, are you allowed to disinherit a child who goes OTD?
Wait a minute, there's no mechanism for disinheriting
just changing your will.
There's no official method for disinheriting, but would you be encouraged to use the halachic will, for example?
Yeah.
To ensure that the child not receive any money. So classically, it was assumed that you should give the child money, because if they get disinherited, then it's going to make them even more resentful towards Judaism, so then they'll stay off.
Mm-hmm.
But Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think, writes in the Tshuva, he says, oh, nowadays, everyone who's not frum is so far off that there's no hope. Then others say, no, well, now there's obviously a tiny sliver of hope, so it doesn't mean glimmer. I was combining sliver and glimmer. Whatever. So, normally you wouldn't, so the Rav Moshe Feinstein was more in favor of it, but nowadays, again, unless the child, it depends exactly how far off the child is, but it's normally recommended not to disinherit any children completely.
Well, he probably he was Nifter in the 86, I think.
Yeah.
And,
he wrote Shuv in the 60s.
Okay, and that was before the big rise of Chabad.
What is that?
Right, Baal Tshuva movement. Okay.
In his present form.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but let's say... Okay, but that applies to, let's say, a somewhat traditional person who's cognizant of Judaism, and the child the child is off the derech, but maybe will be chozer b'tshuva completely. But let's say you have a child.
Suppose a child of a frum family.
Right, a child of a frum family that's really completely off. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that's it's a very sensitive question and should be dealt with on a case by case basis. Aval ben shifcha v'nochris eino yoresh v'eino kiven l'shum dover. But if a Jewish man has a child with a shifcha or a non-Jewish woman, then the child is not Jewish and they're considered not halachically related. You get the shaila also that I mentioned this year between Minchamayr a couple weeks ago, that I have a friend who is a child of a couple where the his parents were not from when they got married, and his father was not Jewish. So, actually, the father's father was Jewish. Yeah. The father's mother's father. The father was not Jewish. So, a couple years later, after their kids were born, soon after the kids were born, the couple became Bali Tshuva. Now they're very fine, upstanding from family, but the father had to convert because he was not Jewish. So that means Al Pidin, so he is not related to his three kids. I mean, it doesn't matter. They have fraternal relationship with him, and they're going to sit Shiva for him, et cetera, even though halachically they don't have to.
Can't have yichud with them, though, right?
No, I wouldn't go that far. Yeah, I thought of that, but I don't think we would go that far. Because Lemaisa, he is their biological father, and he grew up with them the whole time, so he has the feeling towards them as if it was a biological...
But they wouldn't have his name, then. What his Jewish name.
You mean when he gets called up for an aliyah?
Yeah, or something.
It should be... Technically, yes. When you get called up for an aliyah, or when you write an official document... it should be Ben the mother's name, or Bas the mother's name.
Not Avraham.
No, you never use Ben Avraham unless it's a convert.
Maybe that's the guy's name.
Obviously, Ben Avraham Avinu. Right, if you write an official document, you have to single out the person as a convert. So when you're writing a ksuba or a get, you have to write, you don't write just Ben Avraham, you have to write Ben Avraham Avinu.
Well, kids adopted.
Kids adopted.
Of course, you call them to the Torah, you don't say...
Wait, hold on. So you don't say, but you, when you're reading the ksuba aloud, if you don't want to, if she doesn't want to advertise that she's a convert, so then you don't have to say, you could leave out the Avinu when you read it aloud. Okay. And when you're getting an aliyah, so also you don't normally say Ben Avraham, you just say Ben Avraham.
Right.
So it's not to explicitly state that the person is a convert. So the thing is that using the father's name as a halachic identifier is really just it's an identification thing. It's like a last name to a certain extent. So that's why, at least b'di'eved, it's a shaila maybe in certain situations to do a lechatchila. But even in a get, which has the most stringent standards of halachic documentation, if you write the person as the son of, and you write the adopted father's name, it would be kosher. Mm-hmm. But at least b'di'eved, it would be kosher.
Because that's how the person was known.
Correct. That's how the person is known. So this friend of mine, whose father was technically not halachically related to his father, if you wrote on his ksuba, if you write on his ksuba, Ben. His biological father's name, it would be kosher b'di'eved. But in that situation, technically, again, you resort to the technical halacha. So technically, this would not be, he would not be the heir of the father. The father is, technically speaking, a childless convert.
What if you converted before?
Yes.
No.
But that's not where they were at.
They didn't have the they didn't have that idea beforehand. They became Baal Tshuva. They became Baal Tshuva afterwards. He's a very, very fine fellow. I met the father several times. Very, very fine fellow. But found his way a little bit later than we would have liked. But okay, so he's getting a lot of schar in Olam Haba anyway. Yeah.
Had that situation been reversed and the mother was the convert,
yeah,
and they all converted subsequently, how would that be?
In terms of what?
In terms of the inheritance. I mean, I know a family where...
You mean the father was a born Jew,
right,
and he intermarried, and then he had a few kids with a wife, and then...
The wife and the children
they became Bali Tshuva, and the wife and the children converted. Same thing. Not halachic heirs. That's Ben Shifcha Ben Ochris, yeah. That would be exactly the... that would be the same thing. So, again, normally you're going to make them your heirs via a halachic will. I had this case also. I went out with someone. I didn't know this before we started going out. Not that it would have affected it necessarily, but she told me on the first date that this was the exact situation. Her father was born Jew. Her mother was not Jewish. And they had two kids. And then they became Bali Tshuva when she was a tiny, tiny child. So the mother and the two kids converted. And then, after that... The parents had several more kids. So there you have the really weird situation that the first two kids, it's all one big happy family, right? But the first two kids are halachically related to the are not halachically related to the parents, but the second group of kids is halachically related to the parents. So if you're going to the technical halacha of the Yerusha, the first kids would get nothing. Only the second group of kids that would get part of the Yerusha. So again, I assume they would rectify that with some sort of halachic mechanism, I hope. But it's you have nowadays with the prevalence of intermarriage, unfortunately, you have a lot of situations like this. Again, for most practical day-to-day purposes, it really doesn't matter. But when you get to things like this, you could potentially run into some difficulties. V'chachomim tiknu, the sages said, sheyehei ha'adam yoresh es ishto, that a husband inherits the wife, min ha'nisuin, not if they only have erusin, which is the preliminary status, state of marriage, but if they're fully living together as husband and wife, then the husband inherits the wife. But we pointed out before that the wife does not inherit the husband in classical halacha. But again, there are, of course, ways around that with the halachic will. And also some suggest that nowadays the wife is more of an equal partner anyway in the money than she used to be. B'samchu adavar min hakosov. So it says, v'yarashu sa, there are different types of drushes that are found in the Gemara that explain as a peg why amid the Rabbanan they instituted that a husband should inherit his wife. There are those who disagree with this. They hold that this is the raisa, that a husband inherits the wife, but they're normally accepted. The chos of Harambam, zichrono livracha, umiklal ze hadin shel nachalos, beli safek, heyos habechor notal pishnaim. The Rambam holds that the halacha of a bechor, the firstborn son, is part of this mitzvah. The Ramban, I think, counts it as a separate mitzvah, that the bechor should take a double portion of the inheritance. But the Rambam says it's just part of the mitzvah of nachla. Shezoi mikal mitzvah z'nachla. So pishnayim perusho shnei chalokim. It means two portions. Kilomar ashim hayu shnei achim. Let's say they're two brothers and one is a bechor. Osin min hamamon shlosha chalokim. You separate the money into three parts. Habechor nota hashnayim. The bechor takes two portions. And the remaining portion will go to the regular son, not the non-bechor. V'imayu shlosha, there are three. Osin min arba chalokim. V'nota hashnayim, etc. You get the idea. You add one to the number of sons if there is a bechor, and then you divide accordingly. If the bechor is the only son, so it's irrelevant. V'imem chamishos v'enoshisha. You get this. Ms. Thursh can explain the math to us after class. The math of a bechor. You add one to the. You could write an equation for us. Put it, you know, right on the blackboard.
N plus one.
Oh, M, exactly. N plus 1 divided by
N.
Right. Ve'ein ha-bechor noto b'shnayim ela b'nechosim ha-muchzokim la'aviv. That it only applies, the bechor taking an extra portion only applies to money that his father actually is in possession of at time of death. So, for example, klomar shabar b'shuzavi b'chayev v'o baruim la'voy la'aviv. Not the ones that are due to him. So let's say the father is owed a debt at the time of death, and he doesn't actually have the money in his possession, so that does not count towards the Bechor's double portion. That will be divided, when the debt is repaid, it will be divided evenly amongst all the sons.
That would apply to stocks.
Ooh.
What?
Good.
No, you take the valuation of the stock at the time of death.
So that's a big shaila actually in the postgame. What is the status of things like stocks and bank accounts? It's a machlokes among the Avkin and Prey postgame how that works, because in a bank account, yeah, you own that money right now, but you don't actually have physical possession of any money. It's a little bit funny. You could go close their account at the bank and they'll give you your money.
Mm-hmm.
Again, money, okay, money doesn't really exist anymore. It's numbers in a computer. Okay, yeah. That's as far as... So you all... Yeah.
That means nobody really owns anything except for whoever happens to be in his wallet, you know? I mean, or some valuable thing they happen to have.
Maybe. Yeah, if you have to actually have it in your possession. Yeah.
Actually, like, pretty much, yeah.
No.
So if in the bank account.
The Bechor is out of luck then, can't really.
The Bechor.
You have the account in your possession.
What does that mean? Money nowadays is different from what money used to be in the times of the Chumash and the Gemara.
What about coming dividends from the stocks?
That's for sure, Roy.
That means it's after the death. That's not the.
Yeah, that's for sure, Roy. That's not Moksak. That's for sure.
You have a concept in secular law called tenancy in common.
Okay.
With right of survivorship.
It's like a house.
Oh, that sounds complicated. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So what you have is you have a joint account, and it says Mr. A and Mr. Mm-hmm. B. Joint tenants with right of survivorship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if one person dies, the entire thing goes to the other person.
Yeah.
It precedes anything in the will.
Okay. That's yeah.
The question is halachically, is that...
Halachically, I don't want to say for sure, guy. I have to look into it, but... Mm-hmm. Logically, I would say probably that the joint ownership would mean that after death, technically, the half or whatever portion that was owned by the testator would now pass to the heirs. It would not the halacha would...
Under secular law, it passes to the partner.
Even so, okay, but the second of death, the secular law is one thing and the Jewish law is another thing.
Right. So if the joint tenancy is with a non-Jew, it's probably not an issue.
Why?
Ashkenaz would be. Under halacha, he'd still be stealing from the heirs.
Exactly.
Okay.
100%. You got it. So again, he doesn't care, but...
So someone who enters into a joint tenancy should probably enter into a halachic will.
Everyone, again.
Yeah.
I said it many times. Everyone in this room, with the exception of Mrs. Hirsch, needs to write a halachic will. Everyone.
She's got girls.
What?
Oh,
she has all. She has
two. Your two kids are both daughters, right?
Right. So the other families in the shul, there are families in the shul with only sons. Mm-hmm. I think there's more than one. We have more than one family in the shul with only sons, and the sub for the first son was born by C-section, so he's not a bechor. So they don't need a halachic will either. But in the absence. Anyone in the shul who has no biological children or has biological children of both gender needs to if they don't want their assets transferred in accordance with the halacha, has to write a halachic will.
In the state of New York, if you have a secular will, the state doesn't give a damn whether you have a halachic will.
Which is why if you don't want the people who are beneficiaries of a secular will to be considered stealing in the eyes of God, then you have to write a halachic will.
What if you're
the secular will? That's secular will. Who cares? That's Jewish. We should think. We have to think halachically. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm just thinking about her situation.
Yeah.
If she has living brothers-in-law.
Brothers-in-law doesn't matter. No, the daughters come first.
Her husband's brothers.
Daughters come first. Children always come first.
Unless they're female.
No. Children come first. Son, within the children, the sons come before the daughters, but the daughters supersede. Right, the daughters supersede. The daughters certainly supersede and non-children.
Part doesn't get
back to them. It
doesn't get any part of the inheritance. The other son is stealing.
If
Yitzchak was stealing when Yishmael was sent away.
No, that's the. No, that's because Yitzchak was, I mean, to use an anachronistic terminology, Yitzchak was Jewish, and Esav was not Jewish. Therefore, only the Jewish son gets the inheritance.
I'm sorry,
Yitzchak and Yishmael. That's right. Yeah, Yitzchak and the same thing.
But Yishmael was just as Jewish as
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. Again, Jewish is an anachronistic term, but it's
yes, it isn't.
Yeah. Sorry, did you want to say something?
If something was already done,
yeah.
Let's say. You said the brother, the son, can give up his.
If the parents don't have a halachic will,
right,
and you have a brother and a sister, let's say me, my situation. I have only one. I have one younger sister. That's all. That's all I have. So I'll be din. I should inherit my parents' entire estate. So. If when my parents die, I'd may have Esrim and plus. So they, if my sister, if they don't have a halachic will, and my sister takes half of the inheritance, as is, I'm sure, stated in their halacha, in their secular will, they will be, she will be, in halachically speaking, in the eyes of God, she will be stealing. Yeah, she'll be stealing
and
my
you
money.
You can't rectify that.
Sure, you could.
Why should
you?
What do you mean?
Just said you
oh, I can. Yes, yes. If I say, "Hey, sis," you know, I respect our parents' wishes so much, and I just, I want to do what they would have wanted. So therefore, I am mochel b'lev shalem. I give you rights to half of the inheritance that stayed in their secular will. Then yes, she's not stealing, but that's my dependent
that's
on my mechila. It's my call, and it also. In the moment of their death, so I will own everything, and then afterwards I could be mochel or not.
But for the period of time between their death and your making the statement,
correct?
You're stealing.
She's stealing.
I mean, she's
well,
stealing.
No, because it goes. Remember, she doesn't get it until it has to go through probate, so that it becomes an
right,
estate.
Just make sure under secular law, she's getting half under the estate, because otherwise. You'd be liable for gift tax for giving her that half.
Oh, you're good.
Listen, anyway, if it was done already, is there any way to do retroactively for the son to say...
Yeah, I mean, he didn't know about this.
He didn't know about this. Uh-huh. Nobody knew. Laura didn't know about this.
Yeah, so if he didn't assert his rights and he didn't care and he just assumed it would be divided according to the secular will, so I guess that's okay. But after the fact, he should say that he didn't... he gives me his mochel on it. But again, that's up to him. Best is to have a halachic will because, again, we hope that people will do what the parents wanted, but not everyone is. So, again, you don't really have to, Alpidin. It's not, you know, maybe it's lifting Mishuras Adin that you want to honor your parents, and but to have an actual requirement is
well,
not.
Well, as you pointed out, it's for the benefit of the children, actually, not for the benefit of the person who's giving the.
Yeah.
It's for the benefit of... So if my parents do a halachic will, so the only beneficiary is my sister. She won't be stealing, I'll be then.
Right.
Yeah. For me, it's worse. For them, it doesn't matter, because they'll
right.
be in Olam
HaEmes. So you're doing
yeah.
it for your children. This
All right.
Children.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a story for now. Yeah.
You may have put this, and I may have forgotten already.
Yeah.
What happens, if, I guess, in the second law, the wife and husband, and... the husband has allocated for one of the children but not for the other, and the wife compensates.
I thought you were going to this.
If the secular law, so if the wife inherits the husband, but in halacha she doesn't inherit the husband unless she's the halachic heir, and if she's the halachic heir, then she can do with the money whatever she wants. If he does halachic will, that designates her as the heir.
And if there's no halachic will, how do you correct the situation?
You can't.
Oh, is this your lady lawyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got a tongue speak?